Welcome back to Issues Etc. here in the third hour. We're going to wind up our review of D. James Kennedy's sermon from Sunday, Was Abraham Lincoln a Christian? Dr. Uwe Simonetto joins us here in Studio A right after that. We'll be talking about the scientist as a calling from God. And then in the last half hour, Wesley Smith from the Discovery Institute joins us to talk about Jim Talent's recent removal of his own name from a Senate bill that would ban all human cloning. Does that mean he's backing off? Well, it means something different, but Wesley's going to have to explain it to us in about 25 minutes here on Issues, Etc. Now, I'm going to play the final 4 minutes of Kennedy's sermon all the way through and draw it to its conclusion, to be fair to Dr. Kennedy, see whether he gets to the cross from Abraham Lincoln and from kind of a generic mention of Christ he's done so far. Here he goes.
And Lincoln leaped to his feet and threw his arms around this pastor and said, "Do you mean that?" He said, "Christ said that God is not a God of the dead, but of the living. And it's one of the great doctrines of Christianity that he is alive forevermore with Christ." Lincoln grabbed him and put his head on his shoulder and wept, "Alive, alive. My boy is alive." That was the beginning of a transformation, which took place some while later when Lincoln went to Gettysburg. He was not the featured speaker. The featured speaker, of course, was the most well-known orator in America at the time. You all know his name. He spoke for 2 hours. Edward Everett did, and you remember what he said. Lincoln spoke for 2 minutes, and most all of us remember what he said. Well, when Lincoln got there, he looked out on this immense cemetery which they had come to dedicate at Gettysburg, covered with thousands of white crosses. And as he looked at those crosses, as he tells it in a letter that he wrote to a clergyman in Illinois, who wrote him a letter and asked the question, said, "Mr. President, do you love Jesus?" And this is what Lincoln replied in his letter. "When I left Springfield and asked you all to pray for me, I was not a Christian. When I came to Washington, I was not a Christian. When my beloved son, Willie, died, I was not a Christian. But when I came to Gettysburg and there looked over those thousands of white crosses, I then and there consecrated my heart to Christ. Yes, I do love Jesus." Truly, Lincoln had climbed Mount Calvary with John and had come to see the gospel of grace. He was a new person. So, dear friend, I would say to you, Abraham Lincoln became a Christian. Have you? Or are you still of the false impression that by striving to be good or to be religious or to be moral or keep the commandments, that you're going to make yourself acceptable to God? You never will. You need to acknowledge your sin and place your trust in the only Savior there is, in Jesus Christ. Have you done that? If not, I hope you'll do it right now. Father, should there be those here today that have not experienced that salvation, who do not have the blessed assurance of everlasting life, who are still vainly struggling to make themselves acceptable to Thee, may they know that they will never be acceptable in themselves, but they are by Your grace accepted, though unacceptable, because of the life and death of Christ, our Redeemer. May they say, "Lord Jesus, right now I consecrate my heart unto thee. Come into my life, cleanse me and forgive me and make me thine own. In thy blessed name, amen.
Interesting, very interesting. Now he gets to the life and the death of Jesus for sinners. And he does make it clear at the end of this sermon, well, first of all, how you're not saved. That is, by striving to make yourself acceptable to God. He uses all the right terminology. He talks about Mount Calvary and the gospel and grace. And until literally the very end, he merely hints at something resembling the gospel. Do what Abe Lincoln did. The emphasis of this sermon is squarely upon what Lincoln did. And then now what you should do. Now, Jesus has done all he can do. The rest is up to you. Now, this is a good question here. Just think about it. We'll kind of let it hang out there for our next sermon review. There's no doubt that he got the gospel out at the end. At the end, it squeaked in. It was not the substance of the sermon, but give him his due. He got the gospel out at the end. He left the burden, however, on those, well, if you're already a Christian, fine, you're just like Abe Lincoln, but he left the burden on those who are perhaps hearing that gospel for the first time, if they stuck around long enough to hear it, left the burden on them. Okay, now Jesus has done everything that he can do, and the rest is up to you. Be like Lincoln, do what Lincoln did. So the bare elements of the gospel are there, but the listener is left with something that he must do to finish what Jesus did. Taking with the left hand what is given with the right. This is a problem with the gospel as a footnote, or the gospel as an afterthought. If the preacher doesn't get in the pulpit determined to preach Christ, but to preach someone else or something else, and then Jesus makes it in, gets honorable mention, perhaps even the gospel gets mentioned. And all the joy and all the comfort of that gospel, what Christ did for sinners, for Lincoln, for you and for me, left conditional on you. For the remainder of this segment, we're going to be talking with Dr. Uwe Simonetto. We'll continue our series on lay vocation today. One we haven't talked about yet, that is the scientist. With all the conflict, or the apparent conflict, between science and religion, can a Christian be a scientist? Is this a godly calling? Uwe's a regular guest. He's an international journalist, and he's director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Uwe, welcome back.
Good to be back.
First off, what did you think about Pope Benedict's statement on the weekend about faith and science?
Well, I basically agree that the church does not have to fear science. It is obviously complicated, it's challenged by the scientific discoveries, but they are not in conflict. So in that sense, I agree with him.
Is there anything, any place where you would take issue with Pope Benedict?
Well, when he says that a church joyfully accepts the real requests of human knowledge and recognizes that spreading the gospel also means really taking charge of the prospects and challenges that modern knowledge unlocks, I think he's messing things up together here. He is brewing things together a little, which I'm always aware of.
Why do you think the Pope feels the need to address this issue of the tension between science and religion? What's the problem he's trying to answer?
Well, the problem basically, of course, had been raised when Cardinal Schönborn of Vienna published an op-ed piece in the New York Times supporting the intelligent design movement, and I think that is the main thing. Also, of course, that that this Pope's predecessor acknowledged evolution. So that's so there seems to be a conflict here, And the Pope writes this thing. Also, don't forget he's a German Pope. He comes out of a country that more than many has been living now for a couple of centuries within the tension of between science and theology. Most of that was fought, obviously, by the Protestant Church and liberal Protestantism on the Christian side. But clearly, being a Christian intellectual, this is something very much on his mind.
Whenever we talk about science and faith, and then, of course, science as a godly calling, we have to answer the question about reason and faith together.
Yeah.
How did Luther understand the proper role of reason for the Christian's thinking, for the Christian's life, for the Christian's theology?
Well, reason, according to Luther, is the operating principle which we have to follow in our daily life in what we call the left-hand kingdom. It is God's gift to us to find our way around here. It's still under sin. But it is by reason that we live. It is not by the gospel that that you run courts or the traffic or the military. So in that sense, Luther emphasized reason. He also said that reason can tell you that God is, but only that God exists, not who God is and why, how he is and what the substance of God would be. And he said if reason presumes to do that, then, of course, reason becomes the devil's whore. So there's a very clear distinction in Luther's theology between faith and reason. And I think it is a distinction that is still valid today.
If the scientist has a godly vocation, what is that calling? What is the scientist called to do?
Well, the first of all, I'm quoting here my friend Charles Ford, who is a mathematician here at St. Louis, and he's also a great Bonhoeffer scholar. And he says the godly calling of the scientist is to explore and discover, much like a historian, explore and discover. And then, of course, you don't explore and discover for the exploration and discovery's sake. You do this for the benefit of someone. So every divine calling to a profession or a vocation in the secular realm has a reason, and the only reason is to serve one's fellow man out of love, and in so doing, serving God. So the scientist's discovery should serve progress in medicine, progress in nutrition, progress in a number of things. Scientists can, of course, screw up, as we all do in our vocations, but what the use made out of his discoveries should be to serve one's fellow human being, and not discovery for discovery's sake, and certainly not, certainly not to aggrandize the scientist. It is not for himself that he makes these discoveries.
Your reaction to the, up until very recently, the famous but now infamous Korean researcher who claimed to have cloned human beings and claimed to have come up with all sorts of new stem cell lines, and then very recently it was discovered, after having been published in a peer-reviewed journal, that he'd falsified most of what he'd done, and that his, in addition to that, his research was unethical by pretty much anyone's standards. Is this an example of a scientist? What went wrong here with this gentleman who has a calling to serve his neighbor through the proper exploration and use of his research?
Well, like so many scientists, so many other scientists, especially faithless scientists, he wanted to be on top of the dung heap, and he did it in a particularly ridiculous way. You know, it is hubris. And the one thing, I mean, I'm not a great fan of the existentialist theologian Paul Tillich, But Paul Tillich said hubris was part of original sin, and I tend to agree with him. And here we have, I mean, a manifest showing of original sin in this thing.
The latest conflict between, or apparent conflict between science and religion, comes in the form of intelligent design. Some rather bright individuals are suggesting, a modest suggestion, that this universe shows evidence of an intelligent designer, and that's about all the more. They say you have written in a piece called Discover about William Dembski, who's been a regular guest, or has been a guest on this program, and his book Intelligent Design. Yeah. What kind of reaction do guys like Dembski get?
Well, the howls of protest from the community is that this is shoddy science or junk science, because he dared to suggest that that the structure of the universe and the structure of our biological makeup is the result of random occurrences rather than ordered design or structured order. And so that is the reaction. In fact, the protest was such that even at Baylor University down in Waco, Texas, which is a Baptist institution, colleagues sabotaged his conferences, tried to have him read out of the scientific community, disinvited him and invited in emails, disinvited guests that he invited to conferences on intelligence side, etc., etc., etc. Another friend of mine, who is an Anglican theologian, an Orthodox Anglican theologian, compared this type of behavior, of course, with Stalinism, and he said people like Dembski have been relegated to Siberia, you know, to just like in the Stalinist era.
Well, on the one side, then, you have kind of an example of overweening pride in science, and then the other, this violent reaction and defensiveness when someone like Dembski suggests that there might be chinks in the armor of the classic Darwinist theory. Mm-hmm. Why such a strong reaction from scientists who have been telling us for years that their case is ironclad, that even if someone did question it, it's not even worth taking seriously? Why even notice someone like William Dembski and his modest suggestion?
Well, of course, if Dembski is right and they are wrong, then they've lost their raison d'etre. It's as simple as that. Then they've been riding the wrong horse all the time. Then Dembski himself says that the violent reaction to his intelligent design concept is due to financial considerations too. There's an enormous amount of money invested in Darwinian research, in evolutionary research, and woe betide that all this be proven wrong. Billions would go the other way.
You have asked some questions in this piece called Called to Discover, where you write about the vocation of the scientist. And you quote from one McDermott.
Yeah.
And for some reason, the first name escapes me here
Gerald,
the copy.
Gerald
McDermott, yeah. Where he says, it is their calling, that is scientists' calling, not to allow methodological blinders to keep them from seeing what's under their noses. What's his point? What is he saying?
Well, the point is we discussed the ideology the other day. It is the point is that if you go through life with ideological blinders, you are no longer open to the width and breadth of what God has done and has accomplished in the universe. Because if you're if you run around with blinders, then as I said, then you are you're on top of the pile. That's your little world, and that is a little world that you draw and propose to the rest of the humanity. And of course, McDermott said, no, we are not allowed. This is, they call it, God calls you to discover. God does not call you to limit your discovery to your little ideology.
You also quote, and you mentioned him before, Charles Fort, a listener and a guest on this program, for some time. When science becomes detached from the acknowledgement of a creator, it becomes destructive. Uwe, you would think, and you know this better than I do, but you would think that given the history of the 20th century, the science community would see this. Science used toward terribly destructive ends. Right. Why do they not see that, as St. Paul would say, when their belly becomes their god, their mind gets bent toward destruction?
I think it is limited intelligence. I really believe that.
Really?
Yeah. I believe it. I mean, you can be the smartest researcher. You can be wonderful with figures. You can discover magnificent things to fight cancer and other stuff, and you can still be, you can be what there used to be a term in Germany in the 1960s, that we're becoming a civilization of specialized idiots. The German word is Fachidiot. I think it's one of the best inventions the German language has ever come up with. And this is true. And it's very strange that the very science that is most blind to any form of divine direction should be the science that investigates life, namely biology. The most hardened atheists and agnostics we have there, whereas by now the cosmological communities, these are astrophysics, it's the ones who study the universe, become more and more open because they see the stunning beauty, and they see all the new discoveries. Or you take somebody like Charles Fort, or indeed Dembski, who are both mathematicians, and who see in their structured way, they see the hand of God. So we are not talking about all scientists, we're not talking about all biologists either, for that matter. But it is very, very odd that the people who are working with life actually are the most ardent opponents of any suggestion that God might be involved with life, which has not been replicated. That's the interesting thing. I mean, life has never been replicated, you know.
Yeah, God is the only one who's succeeded in that experiment. Uwe Simonetto has written a great article titled Called to Discover. It's about science as a godly vocation. You can read it on the web. Issuesetc.org is our website. Click links on the left-hand side, scroll down, and you'll find a direct link to Uwe Simonetto, our guest, and the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation, where you'll find that article, issuesetc.org. Uwe, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for being our guest last night and for all your help yesterday, and thank you for being with us.
Okay, bye.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist and director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation. Again, you can find him at our website, issuesetc.org, over on the left-hand side of the page. Links, scroll down once you click that, and Uwe's there along with the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and all of the great articles that he's been writing lately on that website. When we come back from this break, we're going to turn our attention to a story that is initially quite disturbing. The headline reads in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch of Sunday, Talent's Stem Cell Switch is drawing fire. The kicker, a few pages later, Talent takes new tack on stem cells. Has the good senator backed off from his position, his pro-life position? We'll find out after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Among the most difficult books of the Old Testament is that of the prophet Ezekiel. Yes, Ezekiel's visions and oracles are difficult to understand, yet their message is nothing else than Scripture's message, the message of law and gospel, sin and grace, death and new life. Can the book of Ezekiel be read in a Christ-centered, cross-focused way? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is the Concordia Commentary on Ezekiel chapters 1 through 20. This book is $42.99 plus shipping and handling. For more information, visit our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the Concordia Commentary on Ezekiel. or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, the Concordia Commentary on Ezekiel, chapters 1 through 20.
Good mutations, but they're in the wrong direction.
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Answers in Genesis Ministry. Well, Ken, how can you even have a good mutation?
First of all, let me explain the word mutation. In the cells of animals, plants, and humans are genes. Now, these contain the information, or blueprints, if you like, that build each organism. Now, mutation occurs when there's some sort of mistake. For example, something like ultraviolet light causing a change in one or more of these genes. Well, evolutionists claim that these changes over millions of years help to cause organisms to evolve. But the changes that occur are actually the opposite of what's required for molecules to maintain evolution. For example, there's a winged beetle that lives on large continental areas. But on one particular windy island, the same beetle has no wings. A mutation occurred in the genes of the beetle that caused it to lose the information for wings. Now, evolutionists say that this mutation was beneficial, for a winged beetle would be blown into the sea and drowned. Now, while this benefit may be true for beetles living on the island, here's the point. The beetle has lost information. For evolution to occur, organisms need new information for their genes. The reason for mutations is actually found in Genesis. Because of the curse, things tend to degenerate, not improve, as evolutionists tell us.
Did mistakes occur during the 6 days of creation, or sometime afterwards? For the answer, read Ken Ham's free booklet on the 6 days of creation. It's on our website, answersradio.com.
Dr. Carl Fakencher on the Center of Seminary Life at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Certainly, we would begin by expressing our strong commitment to the Scriptures and the Lutheran Confessions. Everything that we do here is gathered around God's Word, whether that is a matter of our daily worship in the chapel, or the prayer life that is a part of our activity together. The classes themselves are always focused on proclaiming Christ as well. I think another very important aspect of our seminary that makes us unique is the relationship between the faculty and the students. And of course, always it's based on our shared faith in Christ Jesus.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, or to schedule an on-campus visit, call 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155.
Next time in the Bible study, we jump back into the New Testament. We'll consider the first letter from the Apostle Peter. And who better to talk about 1 Peter 1 than Peter himself, otherwise known as Pastor John Lukomsky. 1 Peter 1 next time on the Bible study. Join us. Our program begins in the morning at 10:05. The Bible study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
If you were looking through the paper, how could you miss it yesterday? The pictures and the big headline in the Newswatch section of yesterday's paper, What Peace, talking about the disaster that is the Sudan, from Darfur, north, south, east, west, in this African country. Very, very great need. And LCMS World Relief is there all over the country in many different ways, helping those who are in need. LCMS World Relief underwrites issues, etc. It's good to know that our relief dollars are being used not only in an effective way there with people who, your heart goes out to them. You see these people living under these conditions, chased all over their own country for various reasons, but also with the message of the cross that LCMS World Relief brings to those it helps worldwide. For more information about LCMS World Relief, go to our webpage, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. You'll find their logo there on our homepage, or call them toll-free, and you can donate 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. LCMS World Relief is concerned with both body and soul. When you read stories like this, think about LCMS World Relief. 1-888-930-4438 or our website, issuesetc.org. www.missouriconnect.org. Making contact with our guest, Wesley Smith. We're going to be talking about Missouri Senator Jim Talent's position on stem cell research. The paper is talking about it being a shift. How much of a shift is it? It sounds like no matter what happens, the senator is going to have to explain his position. We'll get Wesley to explain it to us here in just a moment. Tomorrow on the program, food in the book of Revelation. I think this is the last in our series with Pastor Eric Rotman on food in the scriptures. And we'll also continue our series on Eastern Orthodoxy with Dr. Gene Smith tomorrow. This is perhaps one of, if you have not heard the other segments we've done with Dr. Gene Smith on Orthodoxy, you've missed something, but you don't want to miss tomorrow's because it is crucial for understanding what Orthodoxy is. We'll be talking about Eastern Orthodoxy and the liturgy. Now, for how you worship makes a difference wherever you are and whoever you are, but even more so for the Orthodox. And we'll talk about that tomorrow with Dr. Gene Smith as we continue our series on Orthodoxy. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. The headline reads, Talent's stem cell switch is drawing fire. Now, when I saw it, a little shudder ran down my back, and then as I jumped to the jump page, Talent takes new tack on stem cells. You begin to wonder, not reading into the story yet, whether or not one of the strong proponents in the Senate against human cloning has decided to change his mind. And then when you read the first part of the story, the night before he announced to the nation that he was shifting his stance on stem cell research, U.S. Senator Jim Talent conferred with his wife. He's decided to pull his name from the Brownback Landrieu bill that would outlaw all human cloning. So what does this mean? Does this mean that Talent is backing down on the cloning issue? I invite your questions and comments as we talk with Wesley Smith, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Wesley is a regular guest on this program. He'll be our guest, by the way, Sunday night, along with two others, when we broadcast live from the Lutheran Church of Our Savior in Cupertino, California, out in the Bay Area. The second of our remotes for our nationally syndicated Sunday night edition of Issues, Etc. Wesley is a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute and attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, and author of several books, including his latest. It's called Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World. Wesley, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. It's 70 degrees and clear blue skies.
It's not that way here. So you're glad you're where you're at. We'll be where you're at not too long from now. Looking forward to seeing you again in person.
Looking forward to it, too. Actually, I will be in Missouri on Thursday night speaking to Missouri Right to Life, so I'll be entering the cold zone.
Well, luckily, you'll be able to go back and warm your bones.
Very quickly. I'm leaving Dodge Friday.
Okay. Okay, what was your initial reaction? I know what mine was, but what was your initial reaction to Senator Talent's recent statement on stem cell research?
Well, I read the statement very closely. And so what my initial reaction was, he was trying to do something that I think is decent, but he did it in a politically boneheaded way because it called into question his opposition to human cloning. But if you take a look at what he actually stated, his opposition to human cloning, all human cloning, seems to remain very strong. And he seems to want to be trying to pursue what might be called a third way, that is finding a way to find pluripotent stem cells without having to use embryonic sources. But that's by taking his name off the Brownback bill, it appears as if he's weakening on opposing human cloning when I don't think he is.
Okay. What is altered nuclear transfer, and why? What is this key term? What does it mean for Talent Switch here?
Sure. By the way, the person who's pushed the hardest for that is Dr. William Hurlbut, who will be on your show on the 19th.
Yes. Much thanks to you.
And he will obviously be able to present it better than I can. But what he is hoping to accomplish, and there are some tests and animal studies and theoretical discussions going on, is to find a way to create pluripotent cell lines without first going through an embryo. Whether or not that can actually be accomplished remains to be seen, but that's the hope and that's the desire.
Now, I want to get into that just a little deeper in a minute, but why can't Talent keep his name on the Brownback Landrieu bill that would outlaw all human cloning and advocate for altered nuclear transfer.
He could, and that's why I think it was a boneheaded move, because I think Senator Talent, his reading of what the Brownback bill would do is an error, I believe. That Senator Brownback's bill, Mary Landrieu's bill, certainly is not aimed at preventing alternative sources from being experimented with. So I think he made a mistake, but I think it's really incumbent upon him now to clear up any confusion and not only unequivocally state that he opposes all human cloning, but I think now he actually, ironically, is in a position where he could get a lot of attention as to why the Missouri initiative that's pending is wrong, because, you know, there's really a lot of dishonesty happening in the Missouri initiative that claims to outlaw all human cloning when it actually legalizes it. The act of cloning is somatic cell nuclear transfer, but this initiative acts as if the act of cloning would be implantation in a uterus. That's not science. That's politics. That's spin. And at this point, I think Senator Talent could make that very clear by unequivocally stating not only that he still opposes all human cloning, even though he supports this ANT proposal, but that the Stowers Institute-promoted bill, or the Stowers money, is disingenuous and is trying to pull the wool over the people of the Missouri, pull the wool over their eyes.
Okay, so there are some who believe that we can get stem cells, these pluripotent stem cells, without human cloning. That's the altered nuclear transfer.
And without creating and destroying embryos.
How is that different? Just elaborate a bit on what is... We've come to call it embryonic stem cell research, but how is ANT, altered nuclear transfer, different from what is being proposed by those who say, let's just clone and get the cells?
Well, because it wouldn't create an embryo. It would never create an organized entity that would be a human embryo. The reason, you said that we're calling it embryonic stem cell research, that's not by accident. That's by intent. There's been a multi-year, multi-million-dollar propaganda campaign to try to confuse the idea of embryonic stem cell research using leftover embryos from in vitro fertilization practices from human cloning. What the Stowers Institute and former Senator Danforth and others are stating in Missouri is that those are the same thing when they're not. And they're trying to fool people into thinking that they're outlawing human cloning when they're actually explicitly trying to make it a constitutional right in the state of Missouri. So whether one agrees or disagrees with the proposal with embryonic stem cell research, one should at least, for the sake of democracy and respect for democratic processes, insist that these people present their proposal in an honest fashion. They're not. They're presenting their proposal in a profoundly dishonest fashion, and frankly, I think it's contemptuous of democracy. Shame on Senator Danforth, and shame on the Stowers Institute for trying to fool people in Missouri into voting for a bill they might think would ban human cloning when it supports it.
This kind of attends what you had mentioned before, and that is, it appears to me the best construction I can put on Senator Talent's move here is that he has been poorly informed about supporting
also,
one thing.
I think he's feeling a lot of pressure in terms of this initiative. You know, you've got in Missouri the Kansas City Star and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, which if they ever wrote an objective and frankly a fair article on this issue, I'd probably be willing to go on television and dance a pirouette. They are so biased in their reporting. Plus the money that is being poured into this campaign, Senator Talent's probable Democratic opponent is pushing on this issue. And frankly, the best way for Senator Talent to win this election, I mean, if you're just talking politics, is to stand firm and be a leader and say, I oppose this initiative. This initiative would legalize human cloning. And these are the reasons why I think human cloning is wrong. If he tries to go kind of like equivocal and seem weak-kneed, he's going to lose his base, and that's how you lose elections.
You mentioned their state auditor, Claire McCaskill.
Yes, that's her name.
Doesn't it seems to make more sense to me, and you've said this is a political mistake, what Talent has done. Not a bad move because he's still supporting the right position, but a political mistake.
Right.
What impression does he give when his opponent says, let's clone away, and he says, I'm going to pull my name off the Brownback
bill? That's right. He gives the impression that he is weak-kneed and that he is trying to run from this issue when he should run toward this issue. Opposing human cloning is a winning political issue if people understand what it is that you're talking about. Poll after poll shows that when you ask people, do you support creating cloned human embryos, not for birth, but for use in medical research, majorities, again after again in these polls, show that they oppose it. But when you ask them, well, do you support cloning cells, which is an inaccurate description, they will tend to support it. What Senator Talent's problem is that he's got an in-the-tank pro-cloning media and a lot of money behind this initiative that are trying to fool Missourians into thinking that the initiative opposes human cloning when it supports it. And if he came out strongly and said, you know, this supports human cloning, this would be creating human life or destroying it, I think that could be a winning political hand if he's willing to play it firmly, strongly, and unapologetically. Now, I'm from California, so perhaps I'm wrong, but I really believe that. I've seen it. I've been to Missouri a lot. I've been to Kansas a lot. I know what the atmosphere is back there. And I also understand the reason Proposition 71 passed here in California is because opponents with only a $400,000 budget were unable to overcome a $35 million budget, which said they were not legalizing human cloning when they were here, too.
Sounds like this is a national strategy.
Absolutely, and it's been real clear for the last couple of years. And if you look back at some of the statements made by the pro-cloning groups before this strategy began, they admitted it was human cloning. They admitted it created human-cloned embryos, and they said, which is an honest argument, well, we think the benefits we could obtain are worth this cost. When they saw the American people were not going along with this, they shifted gears and said, well, we'll say it's not human cloning. We'll say human cloning is a baby being born. Or we'll say human cloning is implantation. That's not science. That's politics. Scientifically, there's only one place human cloning can occur, and that's when the new life is created, that somatic cell nuclear transfer, the same technique used to create Dolly. Now they're saying it isn't the same technique used to create Dolly. It's unbelievable.
Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about Missouri Senator Jim Talent's position on stem cell research. St. Louis Post-Dispatch carrying a story in Sunday's paper, Talent Stem Cell Switch is Drawing Fire, and Talent takes new tack on stem cells. Wesley is a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute, an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, author of several books, including his latest Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World. Our call-in number, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Joe, who calls from his car. Joe, welcome.
Hi, Todd. My take on it is that Talent's opponent, Claire McCaskill, is going to be attacking him by saying that he wants your relatives to die of diseases and things like that because he doesn't support research that could help them. And so what Talent's doing is something that's politically expedient by finding this technology or technique or whatever it is that somehow he's going to construe as not being human cloning but will allow for research to help with people's diseases. That's going to be his ad campaign when Claire McCaskill attacks him.
All right, thank you.
That may be actually true, but he's missing a beat here because he could point out, for example, that Woo-Suk Wang supposedly had created in South Korea all of these great stem cell lines for cloning, and it was all a lie. He could point out that the adult stem cells, he was actually, I think, too harsh. I think his statement about adult stem cells in Senator Talent was wrong. He acted as if, or he spoke as if, these adult stem cells would only be unipotent. That is, that a blood stem cell can only make blood cells. And we've already seen that's not true. We've seen it in the animal models, and we've also seen that adult stem cells are beginning to work in human treating human conditions for heart disease and others. Senator Talent has nothing to worry about if he's willing to stand strongly and firmly and proudly for his position. But if you begin to say, cures, we're not going to get them, well, then you're already half a beat behind the game. And you're not going to win that game playing, half games. You have to be proud of your position and strong in it. You can't run away from it. He's trying to run away from it, and it doesn't work.
But this is the hurdle I see, and I'm kind of trying to put myself in Talent's shoes. I concur with you completely here, Wesley. He's saying, completely speculative, I'm a politician. This is complicated. People will like things simple.
That's right.
And I am never going to be able to
hearing about cures, yeah. And I want people to know I'm for cures too.
And I'm never going to be able to educate the public. So if I go into the science, people's eyes will glaze over. This is the quickest way for me to both head my opponent off at the pass and not have to undertake that gargantuan task of trying to educate people on something while the opponents are being very successful in obfuscating the issue as well.
Yeah, I think you may be right about that, and I have to say I've not had any discussions with Senator Talent or his office. But I think that that kind of, well, you know, I'll try to thread the needle, might work when you're talking about tax policy. You know, it might work when you're talking about something that isn't bedrock morality. But if you, the reason Senator Talent won the last election was because a very strong pro-life movement in Missouri backed him. If he is being seen by them, and I don't know whether this is true or not, to have backed away from those positions that got him elected, then you're going to have fewer of them voting for him, and therefore in a close race, which the last one was and the one he lost before that was, in a close race, you lose votes, but you don't gain any. He has not gained a thing. He has not gained an inch with this position from people who would oppose him because of these policies. But he may have, and I don't know whether he has, but he may have lost with those people who were very excited about him and got him elected. And so I think he needs to come out very strongly and say, while I am looking for a positive third way with this contest idea of finding a way to get pluripotent cells without destroying embryos, that's a nice idea. But you don't need to back away from cloning to support that idea. And the statement and the way he made it appear, or the way it was reported, made it appear that he was backing away from his previous strong position. He needs to make clear very quickly that that is not the case. Plus, you know, he really is in actually a very good position right now to take it to the Stowers Institute crowd and point out on, because he could probably make the Sunday talk shows now, that what they are proposing is human cloning. I mean, the reason the opponents are called Missourians against human cloning is because they want to legalize human cloning.
Wesley, it seems the quickest way for him to clear up the confusion with his base and to do exactly what you just suggested is to get his name back on the Brownback Landrieu bill. Is there any reason, the way you see it, that he can't simply put his name back there?
No, but if he doesn't want to be seen as going, oh, my gosh, yes, oh, my gosh, no, he can say, look, I've got some problems with the way this bill is worded. You know, reasonable people can disagree, but I have no problem with outlawing all human cloning. And he can go on Meet the Press at one of these other Sunday shows and say, you know, I'm against all human cloning. And he can come out very strongly and do talk radio, do your show, do other talk radio shows and say, I oppose this initiative because it would legalize human cloning. Missourians against human cloning are right. And I have, by the way, for full disclosure purposes, provided some informal consulting to Missourians against human cloning without pay. So I make that clear. I have talked to those folks. But I have not talked to Senator Talent. But if he came out and said this initiative is wrong because it legalizes human cloning, and if he, and I've heard, according to the Robert Novak column today, Stowers Institute is threatening to leave Missouri and go to Los Angeles if the people of Missouri don't pass this bill. Are we going to give in to blackmail? If Robert Novak is right, then Stowers Institute is beginning to blackmail the people of Missouri. Since when do the people of Missouri allow themselves to be pushed around in that fashion?
Finally, let's talk about that bill from which the senator took his name, the Brownback Landrieu bill. First of all, does the withdrawal of Talent's name appreciably hurt the potential of this bill?
I think it does, because it gives the impression that it is losing steam instead of gaining steam.
And what makes this bill so important as opposed to all the other that we have heard about regarding human cloning?
Because it would impose a national ban on human somatic cell nuclear transfer. This bill has passed twice in the House of Representatives by strong bipartisan measures by people who are not only pro-life but also people who may be pro-choice but know that human cloning is wrong. By the way, you know, Canada has outlawed all human cloning, and Canada, San Francisco is a country. This isn't a conservative or a liberal bill. This is a human rights bill. It leads to the exploitation of women. It leads to the creation of human life for the purpose of destroying it. And if you're going to start there, why leave it at 2 weeks? Eventually, you're going to get to clone fetal farming. And if people think that we would not engage in cloning and experiments on living fetuses, we already have in this country. In the late 60s and 70s, we conducted live fetal experiments. And we don't want to go back there again.
We're talking about the Missouri Senator Jim Talent's position on stem cell research. Wesley Smith is our guest. He's written a story about this on his blog, www.wesleyjsmith.com. It's all one word, wesleyjsmith.com. You can read that and other things that Wesley has written. Wesley is a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute, an attorney for the International Task Force on Euthanasia and Assisted Suicide, author of many books, including his latest, Consumer's Guide to a Brave New World. And Wesley, looking forward to seeing you Sunday night.
I'm looking forward to it, Todd. It's always going to be glad to see your shaggy head.
Well, it's getting shaggier, believe it or not. It is, really is. I'm actually growing the hair out. I was doing it just for you. Just for you. Just for my California visit, and then it all comes off again. Thanks for being our guest.
I really appreciate it, Todd, for your continual having me on your show, and I look forward to seeing you.
Yeah. We'll be out there at in Cupertino at the Lutheran Church of Our Savior on Sunday night, broadcasting with Wesley Smith, and he has managed to line up for us some excellent guests for a roundtable on this very subject, stem cell research. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, not only educates pastors, training them for the ministry. Young men who enter the seminary learn what they need to know and are trained well with a Christ-centered, cross-focused emphasis for service in the church as the church's pastors, but also trains lay people and offers continuing education for pastors and others. This summer, they've got their continuing education programs out on the road, and you can find out more about it. You can go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. They'll be in places like St. Cloud, Minnesota, Madison, Wisconsin. They'll be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Kearney, Nebraska, my goodness, Austin, Texas. They're at home in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Highland Ranch, Colorado, Salt Lake City, Utah, Seattle, Washington. And late in the summer, River Forest, Illinois, Hickory, North Carolina, are they going to be going a lot of places, Flathead, Montana, I'll get it out, and Jackson, Wyoming. They're taking it all on the road for you. Find out more about it, all the details, through our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Look for the Concordia Theological Seminary Fort Wayne logo, and that'll take you where you need to know to find out about these opportunities for continuing education all through this summer and all over the country. Tomorrow on the program, we continue our series on Eastern Orthodoxy. Dr. Gene Smith, a former Orthodox priest, will be our guest as we continue to talk about this subject, getting to the heart of the matter, really to the practice that is the Confession of Orthodoxy, the liturgy. This is all important. If you've missed other parts, don't miss this part of our series on Eastern Orthodoxy. And we'll also talk about food in the Book of Revelation with Pastor Eric Rotman tomorrow on Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.